This week on the podcast, I talk with young entrepreneur Drew Duboff about his virtual assistant business and what he's done to go from college student to part-time virtual assistant to full-time virtual assistant in just 1.5 years. This episode is filled to the brim with advice for all you lovely virtual assistants out there, especially if you are still in the beginning phases of your business and you are wanting to drastically grow and go full time. Welcome back to this episode of the Virtually Free Podcast. Today I have guest Drew Duboff with me. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy.
You are most welcome. Thanks so much for booking the interview and agreeing to chat with me about your business and all that fun stuff. For everyone who doesn't know, Drew is a virtual assistant turning into an online business manager, I believe, but I won't talk too much about it. So how about Drew, how about you explain to the audience a little bit about what you do and your business and what you've been up to the last few years?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. So I originally started in online business because I had a social media marketing teacher in college, and she said, "Oh, you should start a blog. It'll help you get an interview, you know, with the big companies." And I'm like, "Okay, you know, naive me, you know, a couple of years ago." And so I ended up starting a blog, and I bought an e-course to learn from some people. And then there came a time when they needed support managing their community. And I was like, oh, you know, I can do that. And so without any experience, really, I started freelancing for them. And that was basically when I realized that I enjoyed freelancing more than I enjoyed blogging. And so fast forward, about what would we say, maybe like 6 to 8 months or so. And I had like that interview with the company that I was like primping and priming myself for. And they ended up rejecting me on the second stage of the interviewing process. So the blog didn't help, but I looked at myself and I had an online business. And in a few months after that, I was able to 3x my revenue. So now I'm fortunate enough to be pursuing it full time.
That's awesome. And that I love hearing these stories because I find so many of us that come into the virtual assistant space kind of just accidentally get here.
Yes.
Very similar situations like yours. And it's funny because I started with blogging too. I didn't have my own, well, I had my own blog, but I did not do well. But I started writing for other blogs. Like they paid me nothing. And I would write their blogs on like yoga or like travel or whatever. And then I was like, you know what? I actually enjoy freelancing way more than this. So I think that's really interesting how that's similar. But so when was this? When did you first say, okay, I have an online business. I'm going to effectively like start growing it?
Yeah. So like November of 2017 was when I first bought hosting. Okay. I got that first client in March of 2018. It wasn't until January of 2019, so almost a year later, that I was able to bring on multiple clients. So I was staying steady with that one client for almost a year. And I think it's important for people to realize that you don't always need to be in the client acquisition frenzy mode. Mm. You know, it's okay to have one client and to learn your craft before reaching out to a lot of different people and potentially missing your timing because you're not adequately equipped, you know, to serve them in their business. So I enjoyed that, you know, almost a year long of being with that client. So it was really in that January of 2019 when I said, you know what, this is a business. I was earning roughly like $3,000 at the time, which was more than my part-time job, which was like $800 a month working in like campus dining at my college. So it was, you know, very much real. And that was real money that was coming in. And when you times that by 12, it's 36,000, and that's nothing to laugh at. So that was really the definitive time for me when I was like, okay, you know, I can do this.
Amazing. That's awesome. I'd love, okay, let's talk about a little bit about that 1 year that you had when you were just working for the one client. So you said something that I swooned. You can't see me, but I was swooning when you said it, was that, that it's okay to not be in the client acquisition phase all the time, that it's okay to sit with one or two clients and really hone in and start developing a really highly sought after craft. Yeah. And I love that because I'm a big perfectionist. So that, well, that comes with its own set of problems, but I like the idea of like really getting good at what you do, because at least for me, and I try to do this in my, you know, my content that I produce for wannabe and current virtual assistants and online business managers, social medias, all that fun stuff, is that you do need to take some time doing that, because it's not just like, okay, I can do social media, now I deserve clients. No, like there's certain different aspects. Like, are you going to focus on content? Are you going to focus on engagement? Are you doing both? What strategies, like skills, all that stuff. Like there's so many small details that can really impact how your business is seen that we don't talk about as much. So for you, how did you realize that that was something that you needed to kind of do and just incubate and be like, you know what, I'm going to learn how to be a kick-ass VA for this one client and then I'll grow it, or maybe I won't, or whatever. But like, what really made you think that at the beginning?
Well, for me, it was really, it was a time-based decision. I'm only 21 years old right now, so soon to be 22 in September, but I was a full-time college student at the time, and I was working a part-time job that was 18 to 25 hours per week, and so I really didn't have more than, you know, a few hours, you know, per day, or, you know, 10 to 20 hours per week to work on a client, and so I didn't want to risk not being able to serve a lot of clients effectively because they didn't have that time up front. So it was very much like a time-driven decision. But I also, like, it's important to note that I was spending a lot of time networking, you know, during that year-long period. I wasn't just like not active at all in the community. Because for me, like, I'm all about the relationships. And it takes time, you know, to cultivate those relationships to the extent where people would want to hire you because they trust you. And so, you know, I think we have to differentiate like client acquisition from networking, because they're not all the same. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, like, yes, I am like completely in support of networking, not always in favor of always trying to acquire clients, but you do need to, you know, have a certain network that you can draw upon if you do, you know, need to suddenly gain clients, like you're going full time and you're going to have more hours, or maybe one of your anchor clients, you know, caught you by surprise and, you know, is thinking of terminating your contract with them. You know, there are a lot of different variables at play where you suddenly have to jump into like client acquisition mode. Mm-hmm. But you can kind of stay dormant in the networking phase for a long time. And that's basically what I did. Was I said, I'm going to spend this time learning this client, understanding what they do, understanding freelancing, how to be a freelancer, because no one had taught me that. I've never taken any kind of virtual assistant training course or anything like that. You know, so that part of this business was very much like a learning example for me. It was a crash course. So that takes time, you know. Yeah. You know, no one taught me, you know, how to establish an LLC, or if I needed a DBA, or when do I pay taxes? You know, it takes time to figure that out. You know, so it was a time-based decision and I'm really happy with it.
Well, that's awesome. I sometimes look back and I'm like, man, I could have done my business so different. I could have done this and I would have been in a totally different space much quicker had I, you know. Yeah, hindsight's always 2020 though. So I mean, yeah. What am I gonna say? But Yeah, it's just really interesting to hear from another VA that really prioritized that, because I see it a lot with some people, and like, I know they're doing their best and I know their skill set is great, but they're not putting as much focus on actually getting really good with building their business and learning those very essential facts that you need to, like when to pay taxes and when to, or how to set up an LLC. It's a little, I'm in Canada, so it's a little different, but like, it's overwhelming. There's not really a clear cut, like, this is the first thing you do, this is the second thing you do, especially as a freelancer or virtual assistant. Like, that's probably just like not really that widely available. During this time, like, you were learning, you were building your business, what did you struggle with a lot?
I struggled with a lot.
Like everything.
You know, the businessy side of things was always a challenge, just because I didn't know it. Time was always a challenge because I felt like I didn't have it. And I felt like there was always this, and this is still happening, you know, today. So just because you make money doesn't mean you don't have struggles.
You know,
basically, when you're a freelancer, your priority is your clients. And that's the same with all the freelancers that I know of. And so you're spending all your time satisfying your client because they're the ones who are paying your bills. And that's great to have your bills paid. But when you step back and look at your business, you realize that you're putting virtually no effort into your side of the business and all the effort into, you know, the client side. So when it comes time, you know, to go into client acquisition mode, you might not have the necessary marketing on your site, you know, or any sort of funnels build or anything like that to be able to handle that, right? Because all of your time is being spent on clients. And so I think that was the biggest obstacle for me, was learning almost how to treat myself like a client and get stuff done in my business that needed to happen. Like, my freelance services page was just not great for a long time. It was very outdated. It didn't reflect like the services that I actually did. And if someone visited my page, like, they would inquire and just not like nail, you know, exactly what it was that I did. And so like, it took me probably like almost a year to revamp that page, because I just didn't, you know, spend any time on my side of the business. And, you know, maybe if I did, I would have been able to attract certain clients, you know, earlier. But that was, you know, just something that I had to learn.
Yeah, I think a lot of us fool ourselves into thinking that, oh, like, because we are working for our clients and really making their businesses pop and scale and all that fun, amazing things that we want for our own business, that we forget to actually build our business. Or by the time that we remember, we're exhausted and tired and we just can't.
Yeah.
And for me, it was definitely the second one most, for the first like 2.5 years probably of my business. I mean, I kind of always view back and I'm like, oh man, I struggled for so long, but I had a lot of personal stuff I was dealing with at the same time. But it's just so interesting when we, how we play some tricks on ourselves. And then when we finally are like, okay, you know what, we realize this is what we need to do. And then as soon as we start doing it, we see these tremendous, amazing, life-changing results.
And there's also like a mindset component to it as well. I mean, like, and this is something that I still struggle with, but I look at my business and right now it's like 90%+ of my revenue is coming from freelance clients, right? Like, I might have some affiliate income here, I might have a coaching client there, but the bulk of what I'm making is coming from freelancing. And so it's very easy to slip into this mindset that you're only successful because of other people's businesses.
Yeah.
And that you're not successful in your own right. And it's taken me a long time and talking with a lot of, you know, successful business owners to come to terms with the fact that just because you work on other people's businesses doesn't mean you're not successful in your own right. And if you're, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're struggling with that, you know, I really encourage you to take some time, talk with other people that have done what you're doing, because it is a trap that you can stay stuck in it for months or even years, you know, not realizing that you are successful in your own right.
That's really interesting. I've never actually thought of it from that perspective. And that's actually really powerful. And I think I definitely used to attach some of my success to other people. And it was like, oh, I'm only because of this, or I was already on the team and they had a marketing plan, or like I joined the team and they already had a marketing plan, so it really had nothing to do with me or whatever. And we downplay it a little bit. I mean, I don't do that now. That's definitely a mindset shift, but I could see why that would be a huge struggle for a lot of virtual assistants at the beginning. I'm just like, wow, never actually thought of that. And I think a lot of stuff, Drew. I think about a lot of stuff. So I'm shocked that you threw this curveball at me. But okay, so right now you are working full-time in your business, and that's amazing. What services are you offering?
Yeah, so it's kind of this fun hybrid right now between like virtual assistant stuff and OBM. So on the virtual assistant side of things, it tends to be more customer service based tasks. Okay. So things like managing an email inbox or managing a calendar or managing like a Facebook support group. Kind of things like that. Those tend to be like my bread and butter in the customer service world. And then it also scales more into the OBM side of things. And I've had great times with clients taking care of hiring their freelancers and onboarding them and training them and kind of like the systemizing and documenting side of things as well. And that's kind of the direction that I am looking to move toward in the future. But I think, you know, you have to start at the VA side of things before you can become an OBM. You have to understand how to work for others first.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. I agree. I mean, some people, I mean, I would make the caveat if you have been a project manager or you've done something where you've managed people in corporate or whatever, then it might not be as big of a leap. But for me, like I had managed kids, but that really doesn't count. Yeah. So it's like, I mean, it does count. They're beasts, but you know what I mean? Like it's very different managing human or adults than it is children. So it's definitely something that you need to learn. And for me, I'm a tech VA, and I feel like that gave me a little edge on being an OBM. I just work for one, or I work for three clients, but one, I just do everything for her basically, because she trusts me to do everything for some reason. But I really think it was really important for me to learn like all the ins and outs of, okay, what do I need to do when I manage an inbox? And what do I need to do when I, you know, book an appointment or book airfare or whatever it is, like whatever you're responsible of, because you can be super detail oriented. And then when you transition into OBM stuff, you'll know, you'll be like, oh yeah, well, like I got to do this. And then you step into that more responsibility role. And I think it's interesting that you really are like, I want to go that way. Is there a reason? Because you seem very personable, and I feel like you would really enjoy doing customer service and customer facing relations.
I do. Like, I very much enjoy interacting with people and, you know, seeing the impact, you know, that you can have on someone. Like, I always treasure like the testimonials from people in my coaching program, and, you know, seeing how their lives have been changed, not to like fill an ego or anything like that, but it's just, you know, it's nice to, you know, look at that and feel confident in what you do. You know, I think for me, I have like, just me being honest, you know, I've got a lot of student loan debt to pay, like over $100,000, for a degree that I'm like no longer using.
I'm right there with you. Again.
Yeah. And so for me, like I am financially motivated, and I don't think that's like bad to say, you know. I think when it comes to building a business, we all, most of us at least, are looking at the money. And to me, there's more money involved with the OBM side of things. You can take on fewer clients, but get higher retainers. And it tends to be a more long-term relationship. So you don't always have to be hunting for new clients. So I think that's, you know, that's kind of why I made that switch. And I kind of made the switch very quickly for a client. So they kind of made the decision for me, and I was just kind of following along. Mm-hmm. Don't let clients bully you, though. I'm gonna put that out there. It's okay if you're on board with it, but don't let them bully you.
That's actually a great sidebar, because it does happen. I've seen people like, oh, you can just do this, and I'm like, I don't like doing that, and I don't want to. So no.
I have been voluntold for a lot of tasks before at a rate that is not amenable. So yes, don't let clients bully you. I've learned my lesson in that respect. But yeah, it was really just financially motivated. And I think, like, there comes a point when I look at my business in the future and I say, okay, like, I would like to scale into an agency model. You know, and so for me, it's okay, you know, to take on different kinds of clients, you know, to find some great customer service VAs that I'd love to train and maybe even like create a VA course on it. Because a lot of like VA people teach the business side and not necessarily the skill side, mm-hmm. You know, and so I'd love to kind of create like this symbiotic relationship between the two, and, you know, kind of satisfy like an agency's needs with freelancers that I've trained personally. So there's that degree of trust, you've already vetted them. And then, you know, clients, you're able to handle more clients. And so like the, you know, the gross revenue begins to, you know, increase. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's more money that you can take home. So for me, I think like there's just this natural progression when it comes to business. And there's just, you know, like generally speaking, there's different stages, you know, of business. And, you know, first you're launching, and, you know, then you're growing and you're scaling. And then you kind of like reach this point of maturity. And you're like, okay, like I'm seasoned, I'm good where I am. But you quickly learn that what you've done to take you there is not going to be the same thing that gets you to the next echelon. And so, you know, by staying too comfortable, you know, you're really missing out on a lot of growth and a lot of more long-term growth. You know, so for me, I'm at this period right now of reinvention, where I'm, you know, thinking about working with different kinds of clients, or I'm changing up the skills that I'm doing, or I'm looking at my clients and I'm saying, okay, instead of me doing the same repeatable tasks, what can I do, you know, where I'll be able to learn something, you know, while I'm performing tasks. And so you really have to look at your business and say, what do I want to do? Because you shouldn't be doing things that you don't want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to say thank you for being transparent. I think it's super important. And I think we're all kind of lying if we're not saying that we're doing it to some extent for the money. But that being said, like, I'm going to be devil's advocate, or smooth it out a tiny bit, where it's like, our, like, the reason that, like, the main reason we're doing it is not to be a millionaire. It's because we want to be able to live a life on our own terms, or stay home with our family, or, you know, vacation every single day, or only work 2 hours a week, or whatever it is. But money is the vehicle that's going to get us there. And if we're pretending like that's not it, I think it's kind of doing all of us a disservice, because how are we going to vacation everywhere if we don't have the money to get on the plane, kind of thing. And I think it's really interesting, because you hear so many people like, don't make it about the money. And I 100% agree, but it's a little different than just like, okay, you can't feel bad that you want to make money too, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think I've got a good friend, Natalie Bacon, and she talks a lot about mindset, and it's been like really helpful for me, you know. And there's this thing called like the abundancy versus the scarcity mindset. And like, you really can't be living in this, you know, scarcity mindset, where you think, oh, well, there's not enough money for me, or there's not enough clients. And, you know, when you live in abundancy, like, yes, like there are clients out there that will pay me the money that I want. And like, yes, it may take a little longer to find them, but the reward, you know, will be there. And I think, you know, a lot of us, we start out living in the scarcity mindset, and we're taking on all these clients just because we think they're the only ones that, you know, we will be able to find. And we're doing odd jobs that don't pay well with people we may not want to work with, you know, and eventually you just have to take a step back and say, okay, like, I know my client is out there. I know my ideal, you know, person is there. I just have to find them. And so, like, yes, it is about money, but it's also about thinking that you have, you know, more options. And if those, you know, those options, those people that you want to work with pay more, then, you know, so be it. But at least you're doing something, you know, that satisfies you.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard something from, I forget where I heard it, but it was like one of the most beautiful lines. And I feel like I've seen this in virtual assistant space, is the idea of accepting kind of what life gives us. So in relation, I'm connecting this to like clients. So just kind of being like, okay, these clients have come into my space. They want to work with me. That must mean I should work with them, or I'll work with them because they want to, even though they're not paying me what my bottom line rate is, or they're getting me to do a bunch of services that I hate. We just accept it, especially for virtual assistants that struggle a lot when they get those first few clients, even though they're not perfect fits or even kind of okay fits. They're like, oh, it's fine. Like, I need the money. I need this. And they kind of not put their values out the window, but they're like, okay, like it's either being able to afford my rent or it's not. And I've been in this experience or in this situation so many times where I'm like, I'll never do it again. I'll never work for a client that I get a bad feeling about. I'll never do that. I'll never do this. And then either I don't have enough money, or I'm feeling insecure in my business or something. And then I break that. What am I going for? I break that trust with myself, or that plan with myself. And I'm like, you know what? Never mind. I'm going to sign them. I'm going to get them. And it always blows up in my face every single time. But it's one of those things that you really have to experience. At least I think so, to experience and learn and work through to really get it, you know, because I feel like so many people are like, okay. But I'm different, right?
And there also comes a point, you know, when you're working with your existing clients and they might not have been the person that you thought they originally were, or that's not how they acted on, you know, the discovery call. And so, yes, like they may be giving you, you know, a lot of money, but is that someone that you want to work for? Are they treating you properly? You know, are you being worked fairly for what you're receiving? And so you really have to sometimes make that tough decision of, you know, should I stay with them or should I leave? And if I leave, like what, you know, what are the implications of that? And that's something that I'm dealing with, you know, right now, where, you know, with one of my clients, I don't know if what they've currently got is something that I am interested in staying with. And so I'm at the point right now where I'm prospecting with some other potential clients to try and cover, you know, the revenue that they're bringing in, because it is, you know, it is significant. And I'd be lying, you know, if I said I'd be fine without that revenue, you know. So you really, like, you really need to reflect on who your client is and how they treat you throughout the entire process.
Yeah, and I like that you talk about that. I've had a similar experience happen. I was actually with a client for 2 years, and she's great. She was one of my first coaches that I took a course from. But as I grew and as my business evolved, and she grew and her business evolved, it wasn't a good fit anymore. And I think we kind of both held on to it a little bit longer than we should have, instead of saying, okay, this isn't working anymore, bye. And those can have, like, that can be pretty impactful. But to be able to go out there and be like, okay, this, I know that I need this revenue, and you're being proactive about it. You're saying, okay, let me go find some more clients that could substitute it, so I can be set. I don't have to be in this feast or famine kind of mindset, And I know that once this is set and I can sign this client, then I can so nicely and professionally let the other one go.
Yeah.
And that's something that is something that we really need to learn. I see this happen a lot with virtual assistants. They fall off, or their client isn't communicative, so they stop talking. Or like, it's instead of taking responsibility and being like, okay, be proactive. Let's see what we can learn from this and move forward in a constructive way. They kind of, again, what I said, just kind of let it all happen. And that's when I find the businesses suffer the most and people become disillusioned and they maybe stop wanting to be a virtual assistant.
Yeah, spot on.
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting how it works. It's so funny how much is really our brain than anything else, than skill set and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, Drew, it was actually so wonderful. Well, not actually, it was absolutely so wonderful to chat with you. Before we sign off, I'd love to hear where the audience members and me can find you online.
Sure. So you can check me out over at drewdubof.com. So that's drewdubof.com. And my freelance services page is /freelance-services. So I'm sure you'll provide a link down in the show notes.
Yes.
But so that's where you can find me. I'd love to hear from you. And if you have any questions, becoming a virtual assistant or freelancing, anything like that, I'd love to hear from you as well.
Well, thank you so much. And I would love it if you would leave the listeners with some words of wisdom when it comes to growing their virtual assistant business.
I think the biggest thing that I would say is that you have to listen. You have to listen in different ways, so for starters, listen to your clients, listen to what their needs are, see if that's an issue that you can find in other clients so you can replicate what you're doing for multiple clients, repeatably in, a very time efficient way. That means you can take on more clients and grow and scale quickly. So listen to your clients' pain points. Also, listen to your clients in general. They may say like, my friend needs this kind of service, so they may point you in the direction of referrals. Also grows your business because clients tend to know very similar people in their space, which you may be able to work with. You also have to listen, to yourself and to what you want to do. You may have to make the tough decisions in your business, but if you don't trust yourself to make those decisions confidently, then you're kind of damaging your business. So you really have to listen to yourself. So kind of my advice, at its core is that listening is such a crucial element of becoming a virtual assistant, and you even have to do it on discovery calls, So if you can nail listening, I think you can become a great virtual assistant.